From Hook and Bullet to Policy and Science, we're here to discuss and dissect all matters of importance to Montana's rugged landscape and the people and wildlife that call it home. This is Montana Untamed. Montana attracts hunters from all over the world that apply for licenses to hunt deer and elk in the state. Like many states, Montana limits non-resident opportunities via a lottery system with 17,000 deer-elk combination licenses and 4,600 deer licenses. The number of non-resident hunters that now apply for licenses exceeds the total number of licenses available. With me today is Tom Kuglin of the Montana State News Bureau. Tom, you recently wrote about some new data that you kind of dug up about non-resident hunters in the state. Tell us, what's the story about, and how did you go about reporting it? And you know, it all kind of started with this question and then ended with, you know, analyzing these documents you got from Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, right?
Yeah, that's right. You know, we talk a lot about non-resident hunting in the state and hunting in general. I think it's been a big topic, you know, forever, but, you know, especially in the last couple of years, and with the last legislature, there was a lot of talk about it and some legislation that affected how the draw system works, which we can talk about later. But we were just kind of interested, you know, it kind of started with a question about, hey, we're seeing these record numbers of people applying.
Right.
Where are they all coming from?
Right.
And we're also wondering, too, you know, was there some sort of change between pre and post pandemic? Because, you know, that's sort of correlated with the surge in application numbers.
Right.
So what we decided to do is just do a public records request. So we requested state identifying data, so zip codes or state codes for all the non-resident hunters that had been awarded licenses through the lottery system for the last 4 years. So, you know, nothing specifically identifying each hunter or anything like that. We didn't really care about that. We're just wondering, you know, where are the hot spots where hunters are coming from. And
right. And to make clear for folks, a public information request is just a unofficial process of requesting and accessing public documents held by state agencies, correct?
Yeah, correct. And that we do them very routinely.
Right.
And for things a lot more, you know, accountability journalism than what this was. This
right.
was, hey, we want data that you hold. It should be public. And, you know, it wasn't an issue getting it.
Right.
We did have some back and forth about what exactly I was looking for
right.
and things like that. But after about a month, we were able to get all the data and we got it into spreadsheets and started looking at it. Sort of the interesting thing was we really didn't see year-to-year changes in which states went up and down the list about producing the most non-resident hunters. So the question about pre-post-COVID sort of went out the window, but we still thought the data was super interesting and
right.
thought readers would be interested just to learn, hey, where you know, we sell a lot of non-resident tags. Where are they coming from? And it's also important to say that non-resident hunting you know, while, you know, I'm sure a lot of residents have some strong feelings about it, it's pretty important financially, too. It funds a lot of the wildlife conservation in the state and you know, it's an important part of the economy. So I don't think we wrote this story, or I certainly didn't write this story with the intent of, like, you know, trying to stir up controversy about
right.
non-resident hunters. I was just interested, and I think we had talked about it before I made the request, and I think mm-hmm. you were interested too. And we just thought, hey, let's see what it is.
Well, yeah. And that's kind of the fun and interesting process with reporting from data is you go into it with kind of a hypothesis, you know, a question that may be answered given this data set. And it sounds like that question was this COVID surge. And can you kind of tell us about the reporting process where you pivot from what you think the data is going to tell you to where the data does tell you. And that's kind of where the story goes, right?
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, we have these bordering states to Montana, particularly in the west and to the south, where, you know, we have kind of the same game species. We have elk, deer, mule deer specifically. You know, we didn't really look at antelope in this, but that's probably a factor in people coming to here. So I was kind of curious to see if, hey, are we getting like a lot of hunters from places where there aren't mule deer and elk coming here to hunt? or, you know, are we getting people from neighboring states? And it was a little bit of both.
Right.
So, I mean, do you want to just jump into what we kind of found out?
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about kind of the what states jumped out at you.
Yeah, so Washington State is by far and away the top when we looked at just pure numbers. So over the last 4 years, it's about 101,000-ish licenses that have been awarded through the lottery, and they make up nearly 17,000 of those, so about 17% of the total licenses went to Washington residents. That's by far and away above the second place, which is Minnesota at about 11%, followed by California, Wisconsin. And then you get down the list a little bit more. It's Pennsylvania, North Dakota, and Michigan.
Okay.
And then rounding out the top 10, Oregon, Texas, and Florida. So, you know, we spent a lot of time kind of looking at Washington specifically and just sort of asking the question, you know, how come?
Right.
You've got mule deer and elk and
same game species, a lot of the same habitat types.
Yeah. So, you know, what are sort of some of the factors there?
Right. Right. So it does seem like there is a theme here, and you kind of started to touch on it. There's a handful of Western states, you know, you have Washington and California, and they have higher populations, so they could account for a larger amount of people applying just on a per capita. But I heard a lot of Midwest states and Rust Belt states, and those are, you know, white-tailed turkey states, mm-hmm. you know. And I think a lot of advertising in the hunting industry hypes up this allure of Western hunting. Can you tell us about why we may see a large amount of hunters from, you know, the Midwest and the Rust Belt coming out to Montana, or at least applying for licenses in Montana?
You know, I think any assumptions we make are a little bit anecdotal, so I'll just put a caveat on that. Obviously, you know, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, you know, there's pretty strong hunting cultures there.
Right.
There's a lot of, you know, farming and things like that. You know, I did talk to Mac Menard. He's the director of the Montana Outfitters and Guides Association. I kind of posed this question to him, so if you're an outfitter and you want to get clients, are you going to these states where there aren't necessarily elk and deer and like you're saying, putting out the lure? And he kind of said, no, not really. He said that the businesses, outfitter businesses, a lot of them, what they do is they try to carve out a niche geographically, wherever that is. So they'll go to, you know, a sports show or advertise there and then, you know, let word of mouth sort of spread between local hunters in that area.
Okay.
And that's how a lot of them try to market their business is, you know, if they are going to go out of state, then this is where they're kind of going to the same place every year to sort of tap that hunter base.
Right.
So it didn't sound like it was quite that strategic, even though, you know, there's somebody coming from Minnesota or Wisconsin who, you know, hunts whitetails on a small plot of land. The experience in Montana is a lot different, and I think they'd be more likely to book an outfitter than, say, somebody from Washington that's stomping through the Cascades the rest of the year. So
right, right. You know, and you mentioned Wisconsin, and I have to bring up a story. You know, you and I, we were out bow hunting a couple years ago, and we ran into John.
Oh yes, John.
John from Wisconsin, and he just a hell of a nice guy. And you know, we got to talking with him like you do when you run into other hunters on the mountain, and he packed up all of his stuff, took a month off work, and headed out to Montana. Had never been to Montana before, had never bow hunted elk, had never hunted elk in general. Mm-hmm. And he was just captivated by the process and really enjoyed himself out here. And he just said that, you know, living out there and reading the magazines and seeing, you know, the hunting photos of hunting out west on Instagram and Facebook and all this stuff, and he just had to have a piece of it for himself.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, I think we've actually seen that in the field where these folks from other states just, you know, get drawn to Montana for, you know, the mystique or the opportunity.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. And John was an interesting guy because he put on some serious boot leather.
Oh yeah, he was grinding it out.
He was there to, if he wasn't gonna shoot an elk, he was gonna lose 80 pounds trying.
Yeah, well, he was getting into elk. You know, he was getting into elk. He was doing it right.
You know, and learning by trial and error.
Yeah,
and that, you know, you know, he was, I guess you would say he was competition with us, but you know, there's some camaraderie there.
Well,
too,
he was competition until he was a helpful hand. You know, I had shot a bull, and we had sent him in the same area after another, after a different bull that we had seen the day before. And Tom and I had gone up to pack the rest of the elk down, and over the ridge comes John, and he had never hauled meat before off of the mountain, you know, because back in Wisconsin, they would just drag their deer back to the truck. And he was eager to help us carry a quarter of the elk. So he really wanted the whole experience.
That's not something you're going to say no to, anybody who's packed elk on your back.
Right, right. So, John, if you're listening, thanks again for helping us get that elk off the mountain. Back to the reporting.
Yeah.
And Washington specifically. You were able to speak with Dan Wilson with the group Backcountry Hunters and Anglers there. What did he have to say about, interest among Washington hunters to come to Montana?
Yeah, Dan and I had a really good conversation, and he really thought about the question, which I appreciate. It could just, sometimes you talk to people and they say, well, I don't know, I have some theories, but he really sort of dug into the ethos of hunting and also the practical side of it. Obviously, Washington, any place in Washington, you could be in Montana in a day's drive.
Right.
It has a high population, like 7 million people, so... just by pure population, even if, per capita hunter numbers are lower, there's still a lot of hunters there.
Right.
And it's a western state with public land and game there. So, there is that sort of similarity,
right,
like we talked about. But what he sort of thought was that, for as good as Washington hunters have it, there's some advantages in Montana.
Okay.
We have much longer seasons.
Right.
We don't have to pick our weapon, so you can, in Montana, you can hunt archery, rifle, and now you can hunt muzzleloader too.
Right, all which ends up being specials. Like 12 weeks of the year, right?
Yeah. Not counting even shoulder. I mean, we're not even getting into
shoulder seasons
and right. Things like that. You know, their seasons tend to be pretty short. Like 10 days ish.
Okay.
And he also said that elk are very localized.
Okay.
So there are populations of elk there, but they're in, fairly defined areas. And with the short seasons, it tends to get pretty crowded.
Right.
When you're talking Rocky Mountain elk. Now, they have Roosevelt elk, too,
right.
Which is a little different subspecies, tend to have a little smaller antlers but bigger bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And they're more associated with the coast.
Right.
Now, they're hard to hunt because they're in this really thick country.
Yeah, temperate rainforest, coastal, jungle, basically.
And what he said, too, is a lot of that is private timberland.
Okay.
Which does allow hunting, but it's through a permit system. So.
Oh, interesting.
Well, they sell all these elk tags and deer tags over the counter. You can't necessarily... The access itself is permitted.
So the...
For the Roosevelts.
The process of getting the tag is one barrier to access, but then... Finding a place to hunt these animals is another barrier to access for Washington hunters.
Well, getting the tag, no.
Okay.
Well, they do have some. They do have some trophy areas, things like that, like right. They do in Montana. But they sell all their, like, you can buy a deer elk license over the counter,
okay,
in Washington, just like you can in Montana. So there's unlimited licenses there. The other thing, which I thought was pretty interesting. He talked a little bit about sort of the demographics.
Okay.
And he said, when you look at the numbers per capita, just because there's so many people and there's more urban areas, I think the per capita hunter numbers in Washington are,
right,
low single digits. While in Montana, they're over, one in five people in Montana hunt elk.
Right. I mean,
every year.
We're talking about millions of people in a state that's half the size of Montana.
Yeah, so sort of what he said was, it creates a different culture, and that might make Montana sort of more inviting.
Okay.
Want to go and be with people that enjoy hunting and talk to people about it and sharing that experience. And,
right.
I thought that was pretty interesting insight.
Yeah.
I think there's definitely some truth to it. So.
Right. So now let's look at some of the other states that are high on the list. Say California, which is almost 40 million people. And we kind of started touching upon that with Washington, is how do we take into account the percentage of non-resident licenses that go to people from states like California that have massive amounts of people, just mm-hmm. just a huge per capita difference than, say, you know, Minnesota or Wisconsin?
Yeah, and you know, we tried to think about that too. You know, what's the best way to show this data? The pure numbers is one way to look at it, but we decided to look at it also, like you said, per capita, which was, you know, based on population. So what's the population of a state versus how many licenses went there over the last okay. 4 years? So we looked at that with just the 2022 data, just to make sure that we weren't, you know, trying to spread it and getting weird here. And once we did that, it was actually North Dakota. That was the top state per capita. And by quite a bit, it was like one in 545 residents of North Dakota got a Montana hunting license.
Are North Dakotans just more lucky?
I don't think they're more lucky, but again, it's proximity to Montana, you know, right. You want to be elk hunting. And you know, a half day's drive or a day's drive.
I mean, you're in the breaks. Elk, so. Yeah, right.
Interestingly, though, even with the per capita and Washington being, you know, obviously nothing as close to California, but Washington was like 7.5 million people was still number two on the list, even after we adjusted per capita. And then, you know, Minnesota and Wisconsin were still up there too. So
it's not necessarily that the states with the most people are getting the most tags.
No, but once we did go per capita, though, that's where we started to see like Idaho and Wyoming also crept up in there, South okay. Dakota.
Right.
There's an interesting little anecdote, though, on the per capita thing I just want to mention. Montana was in the top 10 for that list. So we started thinking about it and, you know, when you get people moving here and stuff, there's a residency requirement.
Right.
You got to wait, I think it's 180 days
right.
before you can actually be eligible for a resident license. So the theory would be then that people are, you know, have a Montana address, but they're applying as non-residents. And it wasn't a lot of licenses, but I mean, it was more than, you know, whole other states.
So. Right. Well, and I'd be curious, and I don't think your reporting gets into this, but just another question for the future is, I wonder if Montana's military population plays into that.
Because, absolutely.
You know, their residency could be from a different state. You know, we have a big population of, you know, mm-hmm. Active military folks.
Yeah, no, I think that was something I didn't consider, but I think it's definitely true. And I don't think there's any reason why, you know, somebody from a different state that's stationed in Montana wouldn't want to,
right.
you know, get out and recreate
while they're here.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So basically, you've got anybody who's moved to Montana within 6 months of the season, is going to have to apply as a non-resident to hunt in the state that they technically live in.
Yeah, exactly. And that's sort of the prevailing theory, I think, about why people with a Montana address would have non-resident
right.
licenses. You know, they're here, but for whatever reason, they don't qualify.
Right. Just another curiosity that shows up as you yeah. look at the data set that, you know, you wouldn't have thought of that until you had that set of information in front of you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we certainly have known people who've moved here
right. and
wanted to take up hunting, but I actually chose not to because of, you know, the cost.
Right, just wait a year.
Wait a year or wait 6 months to become a resident.
And then, right.
So, I mean, yeah, it's just interesting.
Okay.
Nothing groundbreaking, but it's interesting. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, you mentioned non-resident hunting applications are awarded via a lottery. And that's why I asked, you know, if North Dakotans are more lucky. But let's talk about how difficult is it to draw a license for these non-residents?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of where we rounded out the story. And again, like, I don't think I wrote this with the idea that, hey, we're gonna gin up controversy here.
Right.
But it is part of the conversation about how licenses are awarded. And so in 2010, Montana's passed a ballot initiative that did away with, at one time we had guaranteed outfitter licenses,
right.
a portion of them. Montana voters decided that we didn't want those anymore. So there's a state law that caps the big game combo licenses at 17,000 and then the deer licenses at 4,600. There's an elk combination license, but it's my understanding it is created by somebody drawing the big game combo and then returning the elk portion.
Okay, so hold on. The number of non-resident licenses is a set number.
By state law.
Unlike the way resident license, so I guess, so, you know, as you know, elk objectives are assessed, mm-hmm. and as, you know, numbers are designated to different hunting districts about how many elk are allowed to be harvested. Mm-hmm. That is, those numbers are based on the population size, population health of elk in those districts, right? And so that those number change year to year, right?
Yeah, I mean, I got to throw in, you know, there's a lot of reasons why objectives are set, and local tolerance of animals is part of that too. So,
but I guess what I'm trying to get at is why doesn't the amount of non-resident license, why doesn't that number fluctuate based on how many elk we actually have?
Because it's capped in state law.
Okay. And that's just a number the legislature had designed.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the thought behind it is you don't want to get flooded.
Right.
Flooded with non-resident hunters that, you know, Montanans live here all year long. And
right.
That's held in the public trust, obviously, with FWP as the trustee.
Okay.
So I mean, I think that's sort of the 30,000 foot view is
right.
is the that is this these are the numbers that are in law.
Right.
We could spend a whole nother podcast talking about why
right
pretty
right.
easily and you know look into that if we ever wanted to, but you know, this is sort of for the purpose of this story. Again, I was just kind of looking at the numbers,
right? So yeah, back to the difficulty of
yeah.
drawing these licenses.
Yeah, so for a lot of years, actually, the deer license has always been pretty popular,
right.
For whatever reason. But the big game combos for a long time, that the ballot initiative also raised the price and then put an inflation sort of increase
variable.
On it. I think it got capped at one point, though. Okay. So it's But anyway, the
big game combo license is a deer tag and an elk tag, correct?
Yeah, and then you get like an upland bird.
Okay.
Kind of. So, but anyway, the about 2017 is the first time that the lottery actually came into play. So you had a stretch there where actually the licenses were underdrawn.
And it was a guaranteed deal.
It was a guaranteed deal. And then FWP actually sold the licenses as surplus.
Oh, right.
So
right.
as a non-resident, after the draw, there was, you know, a couple thousand and you could jump on and buy
it
one.
It almost became an over-the-counter.
Yeah, yeah, it did.
Right.
It actually did. In 2017, 2018, that's when you started to see the number of applicants exceed the licenses available for the big game combo. And by 2020, so this is sort of the start of the, right before the start of the pandemic, it hit 23,000. So you have wow. a 6,000. So all of a sudden, you know, the odds were very good. Then in 2021, it hit 32,000.
Holy cow.
So you had this, and, you know, people have looked at this, the pandemic-related rejuvenation of interest in outdoor recreation.
Yep, absolutely.
All of a sudden, you had a lot of people. And this became a big deal in the legislature because the outfitters were up there saying, you know, we just lost 40% of our draw.
Right.
And then you had the public lands hunter conservation groups on the other side pushing back on that, saying, you know, we don't want to make changes. So, I mean, there was a bill at one point to do guaranteed outfitter tags again. That went down.
Right.
But right at the end of the session, they passed House Bill 637, which, among other things, made outfitted non-residents they have an advantage now in the draw. They can buy an extra preference point.
Oh, okay.
So this is the first year that happened. And
so just to be clear, the timeline, you threw a lot of numbers and dates around, but just to be clear, in, say, the last 5 years, mm-hmm. non-resident combo licenses have gone from a guaranteed thing, even so much so that there's extras left over, to now 40% of those that apply aren't even going to get a license.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little under 50-50 draw now.
Wow.
Because 17 to 32.
So interest in non-resident hunting in Montana has over doubled in the last 5 years.
Yeah, almost doubled in the last 5 years.
Wow.
Just for these licenses.
And that's why it's so hard, or that's why it's getting more difficult to get these licenses for non-residents.
Yeah, and one thing I should note is we did get the numbers for this year. It's a little closer to like 31,000 this year, but,
so leveling
but still
out a little.
Very high.
Right.
And we saw this also, I'll just note this, we saw this with the Smith River too.
Right. Yep.
2021 record number of applications, just astronomical odds to draw. It came down a little bit this year too. So whether we're plateauing or not, you know, we're going to need a little more data, but we're not at records or continuing to set records there again. So you have this extra preference point, and the data from FWP says about between deer and elk licenses, about 7,200 of those were sold.
Okay.
So
sold to the outfitted non-residents,
outfitted non-residents
with this additional preference point.
So how it works in Montana is you put in for a license and then you can buy a preference point as a non-resident. Preference point basically gives you an extra chance in the draw the next year. But the way they set it up is you could get that extra chance, but if you're outfitted, you could buy an additional point with a max of three. So, that's how they're,
you get your name in the hat a couple more times.
Yeah. So you got a better chance of drawing.
And this gives outfitters a little bit more leg up on non-outfitted hunters to make sure that those clients get the tags that they're, you know, booking for.
Correct. And again, you know, I don't think this, we've written a lot about this, the controversy around it. The issue being certainty and being able to draw people when you're running a business, I think, is a legitimate concern.
Right.
And whether you agree with this is the method to do it or not, this is what the legislature did and the governor signed into law. So
it is the law now.
Yeah, it is the law. So this is the first year of that sort of advantage. So, you know, it was interesting to see how many people tried to take advantage of that. So
if it had the effect that the lawmakers intent.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing too is, I just want to mention this real quick, that the extra preference point, the funding from that, goes to like various habitat and access programs.
Oh, cool.
So it's not back into, it's not back into like the general FWP fund. It's actually earmarked for a specific thing that, as part of sort of the attempt to sweeten the deal a little bit, because again, this was pretty controversial when it went through, is to say, we're going to use this extra money to fund programs that predominantly help resident hunters get access. So, you know, I'm sure the controversy around it isn't over, but, again, this was the numbers and so, you know, we're happy to get them out there and sort of just let people digest them and think about them a little bit.
Right. You know, and I will say, Tom has done extensive reporting on kind of the insider baseball, on all that, non-resident, policy making, from the most recent legislative session. So be sure to, check our websites for some of that reporting if you really want to get to the details of that. So basically, Tom, we know that their interest in non-residents hunting Montana is growing and growing every year.
Mm-hmm.
And now we kind of have a clear picture about where those non-residents are coming from, right?
Yeah. I mean, I hope if anything, that's what this story did was, you know, just, we didn't see a trend though, which was a little funny to me. You know, we didn't see, we saw Western states, we saw Midwest states, we saw Pennsylvania, we saw, you know, Florida, Texas. Maybe we didn't learn anything. I don't know. But,
well, we learned that there's widespread interest from across the country and folks coming out to Montana to hunt.
So, and a shout out to Kia Gardner. She's our digital specialist. She made a great heat map and helped out a lot on this story. So, you know, go check out the story if you want to. You can look at every state.
See the visuals and see the breakdowns of the numbers.
And where everybody came from. So all that's available on our website.
All right. Well, thanks, Tom.
Yep. Thanks, Tom.
Montana Untamed is a podcast from the newsrooms of Lee Enterprises Montana newspapers. Visit any of our websites or subscribe wherever podcasts are found.